Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Hey, I'm your host, Jeffrey D. Calhoun, and I'd love it if you join our community at thesuccessfulscreenwriter.com. You'll get access to seminars, workshops, Oscar-nominated screenplays, and even open writing assignments from producers. Get all the tools, resources, and support you need to launch your screenwriting career for free. Now, on to our show. All right, welcome to the podcast. This is exciting. I have on NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. Vic is also an author. He's written over 6 books about the department. Vic, thanks for coming on the show.
Jeffrey, thank you so much for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
All right, so this is a really cool thing. We're using this for a character database. This is a database that I have that are FBI agents, CIA agents. I've got con artists, scientists, all kinds of this great collection of professionals for writers to utilize as motivation and research for their next big project. So having you on here, I'm really excited about it. Tell me, before we kind of launch into this, tell me about your books.
Sure. So my name is Vic Ferrari. I'm a retired 20-year member of the New York City Police Department, born and raised in the Bronx. Had a wonderful 20-year career with the New York City Police Department. I worked in a lot of different units, narcotics, anti-crime, DUI. And then my last 10 years, I was a detective in the NYPD's auto crime division. So anything with chop shops, exporting stolen vehicles out of the country, a lot of mafia cases where back in the day, they were based out of Brooklyn and Queens, and they ran basically a large portion of the auto theft industry. So It's not so much as a Barney Miller detective story. It's more like if you ever saw the movie Heat with De Niro and Pacino, only we weren't as well dressed. We worked on organized crews my last 10 years. If they were up in the middle of the night stealing cars, we were up in the middle of the night of stolen cars. After I retired from the NYPD, I moved down to sunny Florida, bored out of my mind. Got a job with a local police department down here, and it was like going from America's largest police department investigating organized crime to an episode of Reno 911. And they're teaching me, oh, dude, they were teaching me. I spent a half day on how to wrestle an alligator. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Are you kidding me?
That's hilarious.
So it's like, they're like, okay, you grab the duct tape and you get behind it. And I'm like, can't we just shoot these things? And they're like, no, we don't want you going around shooting alligators. So I says, well, you know, it's like I'm driving around on midnights, and in Florida, you're by yourself, you know. So In NYPD, for the most part, unless you're on foot, there's someone with you in the car. I'm driving around in Florida. I don't know the lay of the land. You know, you blindfold me and throw me out of a car in the Bronx, I'll find my way home. Okay. Florida, I don't know north, south, east, west. I'm driving around by myself. I'm like, you know what? I'm not doing this again. This is a young man's game. I'm in my 40s. I retired again. I was bored out of my mind, and at the request of friends and family, they said, you know, you got all these wild stories from the NYPD. You know how to tell a story. Why don't you just start writing? And I said, well, I was so afraid of getting someone divorced or in trouble, and that's, I'm not a sour grapes kind of guy. My books are tell-all, and they are a behind-the-scenes look, but I change the names, the dates, the location. So it's like the end of a Ray Donovan episode or a Law & Order. No person's in this show depicted, because I got to move things around and change a lot of things because I don't want to out anybody or cause anybody a headache. And I don't want to cause myself a headache.
Right, right.
So I started writing these NYPD books. They started selling. And to promote my books, I go on podcast and radio shows like yourself. People are nice enough. They find me interesting and they put me on their forums.
Well, that's fantastic. Can I get the name of a couple of your books right now that are out?
Yeah, absolutely. So my last NYPD book is NYPD Law and Disorder. It's got a picture of a cop scratching his head with a police car in an accident. There's a bad guy running out the back door. That happens. You got the NYPD Flying Circus, Cops, Crime, and Chaos. That's loaded with wild and unbelievable stories about some of the cops I work with, including a guy we used to call El Diablo, who stole a horse and carriage for a ride through Central Park. You got the NYPD, you got Grand Theft Auto, the NYPD's auto crime division. That's everything you wanted to know about the stolen car industry.
Oh, that's amazing. All right. So people can find these books anywhere, right?
Yeah, on Amazon. Just go type in Vic Ferrari, the $10 paperbacks.
So let's get into being on the NYPD and being a detective on there. First off, just walk me through a little bit on what that profession was like, being a detective, because it sounds like you've had a pretty broad career in the department.
Yeah. Well, you got to remember now, I got hired in 1987. So the world has changed.
Okay.
Right? New York has changed. Everything has changed. I got hired. There was a massive hiring increase. So the NYPD hires a small police academy class in the NYPD would be 250 cops. A large class is over 2,000. We hire
in bulk. That's amazing.
So I was in a mid-sized class. I got hired of a group of 1,200. After you go through 6 months of the police academy, they stick you in field training. I was dropped off in the South Bronx, basically, and told, have at it. They put you on foot posts, and you answered calls. You know, it was baptism by fire, and then sometimes they would put you in a car with a training sergeant. You would answer different calls, and they would give you all the shitty jobs because you have to learn. You have to learn what to do when people die with DOAs, cardiacs. And I always wanted to be a detective, so I always tried to position myself to get into investigative units. And after being in the narcotics division, I was always a car guy. I was always getting into car chases. I grew up in a neighborhood where stealing a car was a rite of passage. I wasn't a car thief, but I worked in a gas station where guys were always breezing through with a stolen car. And I knew I knew a car thief's mindset from my neighborhood. So after making a couple of hundred stolen car arrests, I went into the NYPD's auto crime division. And so there's different types of detectives in the NYPD. So most people think of detectives, a precinct detective squad. So in New York City, you have 77 New York City police precincts, right? And upstairs, you have the detective squad. And there's usually between 10 and 20 detectives, depending on the size of the precinct. And they handle everything from bounce checks, domestic violence, the homicides that pop up in the precinct. I worked in OCCB, which is called Organized Crime Control Bureau. So we investigated anything with organized crime specific to stolen vehicles.
Okay.
So I was in an office or a team with guys, and I was in the Manhattan North team. So we handled anything in Manhattan North. But if it branched out into Brooklyn or Queens, we could go with it.
So educate me on becoming a detective. Is this something that you have to take a test for? Is this something you study for? Is this something that you're promoted into? Is this a job you're going to apply for?
Well, so the NYPD works like this. To go up the civil service ladder, it's cop, sergeant, lieutenant, captain, and then anything above that is a political appointee to move up the ladder. I went lateral. To become a detective, you're lateral with a cop, but there's different things that come with that. Your schedule changes. They can change your shift a lot more. And the way you become a detective in the NYPD is you get good evaluations, you keep out of trouble, you keep your nose clean, and you put in for a unit that's an investigative unit. So the auto crime division, narcotics, vice, internal affairs, civilian complaint review board, and the NYPD has so many units. So you go into one of these units, you have to pass a background check. And then if you get your investigative time and you get good evaluations, in my time, it was 18 months, you're promoted to the rank of detective.
Okay. So and you get a pay bump with that.
You do. It's not much. If memory serves me correctly, I think it was back then, it was like $3,500 a year.
Okay. So this is something that you're doing. You're not doing this for the pay. You're not doing this for the hours. You're going into a detective because there's something that really interests you or there's a calling there. Is that correct?
Oh, definitely.
Okay. What do you think most people misunderstand about what you do?
Oh, there's a lot, but I think to hit the nail on the head, it's that cops don't have a sense of humor or cops don't see the irony in things. So think about it. You walk up to a cop and you're going to get that stoic, robotic, yes, sir, yes, ma'am. He's got a poker face on. He's not giving you anything. You really, most times you talk to a cop for a couple of minutes, you walk away and you don't know anything about this person, right? You know more about the kid behind the counter at McDonald's. That's because cops are programmed. Everybody's coming up to you with a problem.
Okay.
And sometimes, and nobody calls the police when they're having a barbecue. They're like, hey, you know what?
Yeah.
I just want another side. Call the precinct. Let's have the cops over. Nobody wants the police showing up. It's embarrassing. You know, nobody likes to be told what to do, including myself. So in my opinion, it's the cops don't have a sense of humor.
Okay. Your people. You're a real person. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Exactly.
Okay. With that, always taking in a problem, so you kind of go into this problem-solving mode, do you think, in your opinion, that detectives tend to be more introverted? Or are there detectives out there that are more extroverted, they're really out there, and they have big personalities? Or is this something that they're just reserved?
What do you mean, from a personality difference between like detectives and cops?
Yeah.
So I can speak for the NYPD, all right?
Yeah, that's all I ask.
Yeah, yeah. So the NYPD's got 35,000 members. Wow. At any given time, between 30 and 35,000 members, right? So you've got a cast of characters. But to boil it down, not all the time, but most of the time, people that gravitate to becoming a detective, your life is going to get upended more than a cop. A cop, you're going to have, for the most part, steady hours, sometimes steady days off. You're only working 8 hours. If you make the occasional arrest, then you get some overtime. Detectives, your hours are getting changed all the time.
Wow.
We're getting thrown in uniform all the time for parades, demonstrations. I mean, in my books, I always talk about how much I hated going down to Times Square. I did that 17 out of my 20 years. So every 4th of July, I was at Coney Island. Every Labor Day, it was in Brooklyn for the West Indian Day Parade. So you definitely get, it's part of the deal you know you're making. Your life is going to get turned around a lot more, but you're investigating crimes. You're not going to calls. You're being more proactive. You're trying to get to the root of the problem of these things. Whereas a cop, you're driving around and you're a slave to the radio. You're going where that radio is directing you.
Yeah.
As a detective, you look for patterns. Or sometimes you try to stop something before it's going to happen.
So how is work-life balance or even trying to balance a family as a detective? I have to expect that's pretty difficult.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't get married during my time with the NYPD. So I was perfect. You know what I mean? I could do as much overtime as I wanted or have my schedule change as much as I wanted. It's rough because most cops, and I can speak for New York City, you know, after a couple of years, they put some money away and they usually purchase a home 60 or 70 miles away from the city. They want to get away from it. And at first it's great, right? Because that hour or 45 minute commute, you get to unwind, you get to decompress, right? But what winds up happening is, and every cop says, how far away do you live? Oh, an hour. It's like 75 miles away, like, what are you, breaking the land speed record? And what will happen a lot of times with cops is they're working all these hours and they're doing this commute. So they're only seeing their family on weekends, really, or vacation. And what happens is when a lot of these cops retire and now they're home all the time, their marriages disintegrate because now all of a sudden they're noticing things like,
right,
why do you keep the dishes here? Or,
yeah,
you know, the wife ran the household or the husband ran the household for X amount of years. And now all of a sudden it's like someone coming back from war. They were gone all these years and now they're back. And now they have their opinions on how the house should be run or why do you do this? And you see it like, Jesus, this guy was married 25 years and like 6 months after he retired, everything went to shit.
That is fascinating. That I would the comparison to someone coming home from war is really quite eye opening, because it kind of is like that. I mean, you're gone for that amount of time, and having to almost kind of rediscover a marriage at that point, I could see right. how that can really disintegrate. You know, another thing I've heard, and I'd love to get your opinion on this, is I've heard after someone is really living that job or a job dedicated like this, that that they die young after they retire.
That it's so funny you should say that. So when I got hired, and we were told, our union told that, they set it down at One Police Plaza. They said, take care of yourselves now, because, and this is in 1987, they sure. said the average cop died at 55 years old or 5 years after retirement. And you do, if you're working, you know, it depends on, some of it depends on the individual and some of it depends on where you work. I mean, if like with me, I was doing surveillance all hours of the night and stuff. And, you know, you're eating Jamaican beef patties and pizza and Chinese food. You know, yeah. I mean, the people, we call it the MSG look, like you're all bloated. You yeah. know what I mean? From that stuff. No, you're right. I was a high school athlete. I always took care of myself. I try to watch what I eat. But yeah, that is true. A lot of cops do fall into that gap where they get overweight, or, you know, they have heart attacks because of the stress of the job. Or like you said, they're not taking care of themselves.
I also wonder if it's if they've lost their purpose, right? You're a NYPD cop or detective. Like that is a big part of your life. It's a big part of your self-identity. You identify as that, right? So when you're no longer that, what are you? And you were able to transition into writing books, telling these stories, entertaining, and really finding that that purpose that way. But if somebody retires, they buy the house by the lake, they don't have anything. What is there to live for, especially if your marriage is disintegrating? And I don't know if that's true or not. It's just something that that's always been in the back of my mind.
Well, no, it's a really good, it's a good question. So, you know, suicide, unfortunately, happens, you know, in police work.
Really?
The gun is there. You know what I mean? It's a split second decision. And, you know, during my career and even after my career, I've known people that have committed suicide. And it's like, I just talked to this guy, or I just talked to her like 6 months ago and they looked fine. And the reality is, you never really know what's going on in someone's head. And I like to equate a 20-year career with the NYPD as a merry-go-round ride. You've got your ups, you got your downs, there's a lot going on, there's music, there's all sorts of shit flying around in the background, but you have to know when to get off that ride. You just do, because if you stay on that ride too long, Seabiscuit's going to throw you on your head. You know what I mean? And there's people that I never took in my entire life, and to this day, I try not to take myself too seriously. You know what I mean? I know I can be the fool. I know I do stupid things sometimes. Right. And I can laugh at myself. I think the trap that you brought up is what some people in law enforcement fall into. That becomes, it becomes them. And it's a fine line. And listen, when I struggled when I first retired, not that I thought about hurting myself, but I'm like, okay, and now what? This is great. Yeah. I got a pension check coming in, but now I've got all this time. I got to wear my seatbelt. I got to drive the speed limit. I've lost all my superpowers. So like, what am I going to do with myself? And I was lucky enough to find something that I can live vicariously through myself, you know, 30 something years later. But I think, like you said, a lot of them, that's who they become. They don't find other hobbies.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do with themselves. And life can become bleak when you don't have something to get up and look forward to in the morning.
No, I totally think so. So you were able to kind of use the street smart knowledge that you gained as a kid, and use that in your career chasing down car thieves, organized crime, which I think is really fascinating. So essentially, you kind of grew up in the neighborhood, and instead of going down the dark path, you went down the path of justice, which is really fascinating. And I would have to assume probably not as common. What kind of person have you seen that was working as a cop or as a detective that was really not fitted for that role but ended up doing it?
Happens all the time. Not a lot, but it does happen. And you're 100% right. It's funny because, so you're a cop at a precinct. This is even before you're a detective, and you're in a precinct a couple of years. And every 6 months, a new class of rookies come in. And rookies in the NYPD are not treated well. Well, but that's not, now it's different. But when I first got hired, you had a lot of guys left over from the Vietnam era.
And they hazing, were not hazing friendly. Stuff.
I'm sorry?
Hazing, stuff like that.
There's always hazing, but it's more, nobody really talks to you. It's like you've been dropped off from another planet. They'll say hi. They'll talk to you through the screen door. Nobody's letting you in. You know what I mean? So you kind of got to figure it out. So then it's the rookies on rookies feeling each other out. And who treats you worse in an NYPD precinct is not the old timers. It's like the kids that were a class or two ahead of you. It's
really?
Like the kid you're ahead of you in high school in the schoolyard.
Oh, my gosh.
Has to push you around. I can't believe you did that. Or, you know what I mean? It's like, and then 6 months or a year when you're up to speed, you're like, that guy's an asshole. You know what I mean? Like, so it's definitely a learning curve. Like, I grew up in a neighborhood that was Irish, Italian, and a little bit of the mafia sprinkled in. Like, you had the Paulie Walnuts guys in front of the social club sunning themselves. I wrote a book, Catholic High School Diaries, got a picture of a kid getting chased out of a confessional, which really happened to me. And I mean,
wow.
I grew up in a neighborhood where the boys were around. My dad was a butcher at a wholesale meat place, and I didn't know anything about the mafia. It was like a 13, 14-year-old, and he used to bring me to work with him. And like, I started seeing things, right? Like a shoplifter got thrown down a flight of stairs for stealing ribs. I'm like, you know, like, what the fuck? You know, the guy was hitting me. I was going up the stairs. The guy come rolling down the stairs screaming. And these two, Carmine and Anthony, are following down the stairs like, oh, Vic, don't worry about him. He's an old friend of ours. And the guy's like, help me, help me. And they dragged him out and they fucking threw him in the street like a pile of garbage, right? And so I'm in the car. So I go to my dad who's cutting meat and I go, what just happened? He goes, don't worry about it. Just keep working. So on the ride home,
wow. I'm like,
what happened? They go, they caught him shoplifting. He goes, they brought him upstairs. They put his hands in a vise and threw him down the stairs. So
that
was my last day working with my father, because he's like, you know what? I got to work here. I need this job. I don't want you starting to buddy up with these people, because in my neighborhood, in that life, that's where it starts. It starts with the football sheets are coming around on Sunday, and then it goes.
Well, What's a football sheet?
So back in the day, the sheets, it would be a piece of paper about this big with all the football games on it with the point spread.
Oh, gambling.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it was in high school.
Wow.
And then I think back, it was an Italian kid from my neighborhood that would do the football sheets, and you would bet everybody, give him $5 in a sheet.
Yeah.
And if you hit, you know, I think it was like, if you pick 3 correct on a $5 bet, you get 20. If you bet 4, but it's a sucker's bet.
Hold on, Vic. So are you telling me that even back then they were running these cons and almost kind of trying to groom the next generation?
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
In high school, so you had a couple of kids like that. You had one kid that was doing it around the classrooms. Then you had another guy who was like a competitor, another Italian kid that was doing it at the candy store before we went to school. So like,
that's,
you know,
amazing.
When you get your soda or, you know, whatever, like they sometimes they'd be like, you'd go by and the two of them be yelling and beating the shit out of each other. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It starts.
Wow.
That shit starts when you're in your teens.
I hope you enjoyed this sneak peek into our character database. To hear the full uncut interview, join our community at thesuccessfulscreenwriter.com. Listen, our character database is amazing and there is nothing else out there like it. This contains interviews with individuals in unique professions such as CIA officers, FBI agents, hackers, con artists, and more, all for you to use as research for your next big scripts. Go to thesuccessfulscreenwriter.com and sign up.